Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. And we'll also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
Hi, it's Ann Nelson, your host for today's show. Today we're going to be looking at planning and financial planning. It's all about having a goal and working consistently towards that goal. I have on the show Christopher Calandra. He is a certified financial planner, or CFP, with over 25 years of experience helping small business owners, retirees, and families help them attain their financial goals and objectives. And he's going to be chatting to us today about goals and saving and working consistently towards that financial plan. So I'm very excited to welcome on the show today Christopher Calandra. Hi.
Good morning, Anne. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Anne.
Okay. I'd like to start out podcast with a bit of background on our guest. So would you like to tell us a bit about yourself, please, and where you are?
I would love to. I am in Connecticut in the United States. My firm, Ann, is Elliott Wealth Management Services. It's a full service investment advisory financial planning firm. We have three offices. Two are in the state of Connecticut in the United States, and the third is in the state of Florida. And I've been a certified financial planner for over 25 years. This is the only career I've known. And we work with individuals, families, and business owners on a host of issues ranging from life insurance planning, investment planning, and most notably, retirement planning.
So you cover a big, broad area there.
Yeah, when we work with clients, and I will often say that we take a big picture approach. We want to be holistic when we're working with clients and look at the totality of their financial situation, what their goals are, what their fears are, what resources they have, and to really work closely with them in a good, strong personal partnership.
That sounds like they'd be in very safe hands dealing with your company.
I think that's true.
Okay. So I've been talking to you earlier and we were intrigued by the fact that the problem financial planners have is that a lot of their clients don't put much time into planning. They're coming to you on average a bit late in their life. So can you talk to me about this disconnect that people have these days as far as their financial planning goes?
Yeah. And, you know, prior to recording this, you and I had a fantastic conversation about this. There's an adage in my industry that the average person or the average family spends more time and planning their vacation than they do their financial future. And I think that is very short-sighted, and it prevents people from achieving their goals or makes it more difficult, more challenging to achieve their long-range goals. So I think it's important for people, especially those that may not really like this topic, they may find it uncomfortable, they may not be familiar with financial topics, but it's really beneficial for them to tackle the subject, whether they do it on their own or they work with a professional firm like mine to help them establish their goals, have an implementation plan to work towards those goals systematically. And thirdly, is to monitor their results to see that they are on track to achieve their goals and also to figure out if the goals might need to be changed. Because, you know, over time, you may think that this is something you want, but something may happen in your life that'll require you to change the order of your goals or maybe swap new goals in for old goals. But working on your financial plan requires you to establish goals, have an implementation plan, and then it's important to monitor those results to make sure you've chosen wisely and you're on the path to success.
It sounds like wonderful advice and the ideal way to go. How difficult is it for people to look into their future and, you know, to say, well, where do I want to be in 30 years' time? Is that just something that they just can't imagine?
It is very difficult. And I know for myself, and I'm a financial geek, it was difficult in my 20s to figure out where I wanted to be when I was 46, which is how old I am now. And even short of 30 years, you know, it's sometimes difficult for somebody that's 50 to figure out when they want to retire, where they want to retire, how much income or assets they're going to need when they retire. So I am a big fan of focusing on what's in front of you. And there's certainly a lot to be said about having long-range plans and have some audacious goals out in the future. But when you break it down to what's in your control, using your example of the 30 years, is if you focus on saving and investing 15% or more of your income, if you can do that consistently, even though you might not know how much that would amount to in 20, 30, 40 years, I'm here to tell you, and all the academic research supports this, that if you save 15% or more consistently, it's hard to manage any scenario where you wouldn't be successful and have some financial wherewithal and have some options on what you want your future to be. And I like that, Anne, because if you sit down with somebody that is, say, in their 20s or 30s, and you say, how much do you want to have in retirement? Well, they don't know, and they don't know how much they're going to earn on their money. They don't know what their income is going to be like over the course of their career. They may not know what their family structure is going to be like. They don't know what inflation is going to be like. So there's so many variables. I think that's somewhat of a fool's errand when you're younger. But what you can focus on, what is tangible, is to save and invest 15% or more of your money. And the future will have a tendency to work itself out if you stick with that key metric.
Okay. So this could be said to be a bit like paying yourself first. You've got to put some money aside.
Yeah, absolutely. It is, I think, a more macro version of pay yourself first. It's also the macro version of the idea that you should systematically invest, you know, put $100 away to dollar cost average to stay out of debt. I mean, there are a lot of subsets of the same topic, but I think the idea is if every year you're taking 15% or more of your income and you're doing that, doing something to accumulate your wealth, that could be investing in the stock market. It could be investing in a small business. It could be building a portfolio of income producing real estate. It could be paying down debt. It could take many, many forms. But if every year you're taking 15% or more and you're in some way enhancing your wealth, and you could do that for the next 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years, I mean, you're going to be a long way towards becoming wealthy and be able then, when you're older, more seasoned, and a little closer to your retirement goals, to be in a very good position to get to where you want to go.
Right. Because we can't rely on the government anymore, can we? I don't think it matters which country you live in. There are so many of us now living to the ripe old age of 90 and beyond that the government pension may not be something that we can rely on in our future. So it makes sense that we should be taking our finances into our own hands, our financial future.
Absolutely. And I think you're right. Relying on the government to be your savior when you get to retirement age, or for them to be your savior 20, 30 years down the line, I think is a risky proposition. And clearly, governments try to do their best to serve their citizens and their constituents. But I'm a believer in taking care of your own financial future, securing your own financial status. And that could take many different forms. Again, small businesses, real estate, the markets, what have you. But I think you're much better off doing it that way and having many more options, so that if the government should not be there for you or should lessen the amount of assistance they can give to you, you'll be much better positioned and not be in dire straits.
Yes, so we can't rely on the government, that's for sure. Does it matter the age that we start this? I assume it does, but can you work with older people as well?
Sure. I mean, listen, I mean, if somebody comes in and they're 80 years old and they say they're still working and they want to retire, but they haven't saved any money, I'm very, very good at what I do, but that's a tough scenario. And also on the flip end of the spectrum, you know, younger people that have longer time horizons, you know, money that they put away in their 20s will have a much greater impact over time than money that they may set aside in their 50s. But if you stick to and the sweet spot, you know, you could start in your 40s, 50s, even early 60s to get your financial house in order. I see it all the time. I work with clients that might be behind when they get to 50 or 60 or even 65. It can be done, but it might take some discipline. And again, it will return to establishing the goals, coming up with a plan, and figuring out a way to monitor the results of that plan so that you could make sure that you're on the path to success. So I don't think for your listeners that might be in their 50s or 60s or maybe even older, that all is lost in the vast majority of situations I've seen over my 25-year work history.
Okay. So when you talk about they'd have to be a bit more disciplined, I assume that if we haven't saved anything and then we're getting to 50 or 60 or more, that we have to be looking at a bigger percentage to we have to put away.
Yeah, and I would describe it, Anne, as the margin for error is smaller. If you're in your 20s and for whatever reason you take a few years off from the 15% metric that I talked about earlier, you know, you could probably get away with it from 27 to 29 if, let's say, you're out of work or starting a business or what have you. You know, you have enough time where your margin of error provides a lot of slack. If you're a 59-year-old instead, and you're way behind and haven't accumulated much wealth and maybe even have some debt, well, then your plan is probably going to require a little bit more discipline and a little bit tougher choices to get you where you want to go. It's going to depend on the situation, of course, but, you know, that's a common thing. Or if you're 59 and haven't accumulated much wealth, I would counsel you that you should figure out a plan to accumulate some wealth so that you could retire in dignity, and that it is doable and it's worthwhile to do, even if you made mistakes for 5, 10, 15, 20 years or longer. You can change, you can improve your fortunes. I've seen it done before, and I would encourage your listeners that if they're in that situation to seek out some assistance, do a little homework, and you can turn around things in many instances, dramatically turn around your financial fortunes.
That's very comforting to know. So what else can we do?
Well, I'll tell you, Anne, one little technique that I've begun using for myself and my staff here at Elliott Wealth Management Services, and also talk to clients about, is to set up your own personal balance sheet. Now, I know some listeners, this may seem really intimidating, but it's not. What I would say is if you set up a spreadsheet, it could be in an Excel spreadsheet, it could be on a pad of paper, it could be some more advanced software. But basically, let's just picture an Excel spreadsheet. Have a line for each of your assets. I own a home, I have money in a retirement account, I have an investment property, I have a bank account, I own a stock, whatever the case is. Add up all your assets and have a total of what those assets are. That's step one. Step two is to add up all your liabilities or all your debts. I have a mortgage, I have a credit card, I have a loan to the bank, whatever. You add up all of your debts. Student loans is another one. You add up all of your debts, and then you have a line item for all of your debts. So now you've identified in step one all of your assets. Step two, you've lined up all of your debts. And now I want you to subtract your debts, the total amount of debts, from your assets. And that's your net worth. That's how much you are worth. If you were a business, if you are a company, that's how much you are worth. I like to do this, Anne, because as I follow my own prescription and I have goals, I have an implementation plan, I'm monitoring my results. This is a key way that I monitor the results, because when I reduce my debt, if I pay off some debt, then my net worth increases. If I put some money away, I increase the value of my business. I buy an investment property, I add money to my retirement account, I add up my assets. That's another way I increase my wealth. And I think if you go through this exercise, some people do it monthly, others do it annually. I personally do it quarterly, and I think that's a good approach, is to do every quarter. I could see how many more assets do I have? Was I able to reduce my debts, and how much did my net worth go up? I think at younger ages, you could do that. I think in your middle ages, you could do that. And I think as you approach retirement and get into retirement, this is a wonderful exercise. It does not take long in most instances. It takes me about a half hour every quarter to compile my numbers, but it's a beautiful view of what's happening in my financial life by just tracking my assets, my liabilities, and what my worth is. If I sold everything I owned and I paid off everybody I owed, how much I would be left with. And I find it very, very motivating. I know my staff does too, and many of my clients, very motivating quarter after quarter, Anne, as you could see your net worth increasing as your assets go up and hopefully your liabilities go down. Is that helpful?
Yes, thank you. Because I assume the aim is to be debt-free.
Debt-free is a great goal. And there are certain financial thinking that says you should never have debt. You should never borrow money. And I think that's a noble goal. And I'm a supporter of that. At the same time, I've met many, many wealthy people, clients, and otherwise, people on podcasts, books I've read, people I've met in my life that have used debt responsibly, wisely, and it's worked out for them. I know personally in my life, I've accumulated a decent nest egg for my family and have had some success. I've used debt. So I think as you get older and as you approach retirement, you do want to focus more on reducing your debts. When I was in my 20s and 30s, I was a little bit more bold and aggressive in using debt to buy like investment properties and to accumulate assets. So I'm a believer that when you get to retirement, as you approach retirement, there should be increased focus on reducing your debt and becoming debt free. And as a general statement, I think all of us at various ages should be very discriminating, very careful, and responsible in using debt. And a classic example, Anne, is, you know, if you're borrowing money to go on a cruise, that's different in my mind than borrowing money to maybe start a business or expand a business or to buy an investment property. So I don't think all debt is created equally, but it's a dangerous thing and it has to be used very wisely. Does that help?
Yes, definitely. So we're talking about debt that you can actually claim as a tax deduction as opposed to debt just for pleasure?
Sure. I mean, debt to finance your lifestyle is almost always a bad idea. Debt, where you get some tax benefits, like you mentioned, and or that helps you accumulate assets or increase income, that then could be, I'm going to say, and I have air quotes, that could be considered good debt, because ultimately that debt enhances that balance sheet I spoke about, because it's helping you either increase your assets and or increasing your income. And that's way different than financing an anniversary dinner or a car or a vacation, which is almost never a good idea.
Okay. We've got a little bit more time. So can we just talk a little bit about the size of the nest egg? I assume there's been a lot of big numbers thrown around lately about how much we need in our nest egg, but we don't necessarily need to come to the end of our life with the same size nest egg, do we?
Yeah, it's a great point, and it's a hot button topic with me. Is if you look at a lot of the financial software that's out there, and it assumes that when you retire, you take an income from your nest egg, and it assumes that you never touch the principal in that nest egg. And it also assumes that your nest egg grows faster than inflation, which ends up in meaning that when you die, at let's say age 85, it assumes you've never spent any of your principal, that your nest egg has grown, and all you've done is taken out the income. And I think the reality is, for most of my clients in the United States, and I believe this is true elsewhere as well, is that they don't mind spending some of their nest egg. They're not necessarily interested in leaving a big, big pot of money to the next generation, which means that some of the assumptions that financial services companies make and what they try and talk you into is accumulating more money than you actually need to retire and have a decent lifestyle. I don't believe there's anything wrong with responsibly spending down your nest egg in retirement. If that's okay with you and it's not a priority to leave some huge nest egg for the next generation. And so I think what you were also asking about is, in my dealings with my clients, a good back of the envelope, simple, rough calculation is that when you retire, you ideally would have 10 times or more what your income is. So in US dollars, if you retired and had $100,000 income, you would want to have at least $1 million of liquid net worth, meaning excluding your personal home, that you would have as a retirement nest egg. Now, it's a general rule. You know, if you have a lot of debt, that rule doesn't work as well. If you have a huge house with no mortgage and a lot of equity in your home, you know, you have to factor that in. But if you want just a simple thing, 10 times your salary when you retire, you should have in liquid net worth when you retire. And that's a pretty good metric for people to think about.
Well, that's very interesting. And it's a bit of a guideline for us too. I know there's a lot of people try and have a simpler life, I suppose, when they retire. So it's a bit like, well, we can have all these broad ideas and they're good to know, but in the end, we probably need to get some financial advice to tweak everything.
Sure. But what we talked about, which is great, is just two simple takeaways for your listeners, is when you're in the accumulation mode, save 15% or more of your income consistently in wealth building endeavors, saving, investing, paying down debt. And then the second thing is you're targeting to have 10 times or more in your nest egg what your income is when you retire. Those are two really basic, simple, yet very effective metrics for your listeners, especially those that may not want to get into a lot of nitty-gritty financial numbers.
Well, that's good advice, and I'd like to thank you very much for sharing that with us today, and I look forward to catching up with you again when we can explore a bit more about what we should be thinking about with our retirement savings.
And it was my pleasure. If any of you listeners want to get more information about me or my firm, some of the things we spoke about, my firm's website is www.elliottswealth.com. Elliott has two L's, two T's, elliottwealth.com. But this was so much fun, Anne. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.